What are cryptocurrencies?
Hey, hey, hey.
What are NFTs?
A non-fungible token.
Time to buy Bitcoin.
Bitcoin just seems like a scam.
How are you today, Charles? Slow day?
No, I'm good. Plenty of things today. The blockchain ecosystem never stops.
No rest for the wicked.
Exactly.
So my name's Ian Rogers. I'm the Chief Experience Officer here at Ledger. And, you know, Ledger is, and you can correct me if I misstate anything, please, Charles. Charles is Ledger's Chief Technical Officer. So I always say when I talk about this stuff, it sounds like marketing. And when Charles talks about it, it sounds like physics. So I'll say what I'm going to say. And then, you know, Charles knows that if I step out of line, he'll tell me that I'm overstating it. But you know, I've heard said by Nico Bacca, one of the founders of Ledger, that one of the things that's most special about Ledger is that it's the only open development system on top of a secure element on the planet. And today we're here to talk about what it means to have security in your application, and in particular what I woke up and read in Ars Technica this morning about a vulnerability found in Apple's M1 chip. So Charles, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So Charles Guillemet, I'm Chief Technology Officer. It's a little bit different, but it's the same.
See, we're already there.
I'm basically in charge of the technology at Ledger, everything related to engineering, infrastructure, architecture, and security. All of this. And my background is cryptography and security. Those are topics I'm interested in since very long time. When I was 12, when I got a computer, I directly started to try to understand these things. And I worked in cryptography and security my whole career, and especially on hardware. So this specific attack that we are going to talk about is something I know very well.
And that's why I'm excited to talk to you about it, because I don't totally understand it, and I'm looking forward to completely understanding it by the end of this talk. Because the article from Ars Technica this morning told us that there's a vulnerability, an unpatchable vulnerability, in the M series of Apple's chips. So maybe Charles, you could tell us, you know, what that means.
Yes, sure. First of all, software is running on some hardware at some point. We are trying to abstract things and to create several layers on top of the hardware. But at some point, the software runs somewhere. And M1 chip is a CPU that is embedded in the last generation smartphone and even in last generation laptop and desktop. So this is a very powerful chip, and it's been designed for performance, because when you are using your smartphone on your desktop, performance is something very important. You want to have a very smooth UI, you want to run complex algorithm, several programs at the same time and so on, and you need to have a high level of performance. And the vulnerability we are talking about is concerned a specific implementation of cryptographic operation, because when you are doing cryptographic stuff with your smartphone and you are doing cryptographic operation very often, for instance, when you connect to a website using HTTPS, then there is some cryptography behind in order to authenticate the website, in order to encrypt the data coming from your laptop, from your smartphone to the website, so that anyone can observe the traffic, but they can't understand what's going on. So cryptography is everywhere, and it needs to be implemented somewhere. And in this case, Apple chips implement OpenSSL, which is a very used cryptographic library that allows you to do what I mentioned, connect to website, doing authentication, encryption, and this kind of thing. And the implementation of this cryptographic library is done in software, but this software runs on the M1 chip. The M1 chip is, again, a chip that is designed for performance. And when it comes to security, you don't have much countermeasure security measure in order to avoid this kind of attack. And the attack that has been published yesterday, the name is GoFetch, is a specific attack that is part of a wide class of attack that is called side channel attacks, side channel analysis. So this is really a field of research that is quite interesting. Let me take a few minutes to try to explain how it works. So The idea behind side channel analysis or side channel attack is to gather a lot of information from the implementation of a cryptographic system rather than trying to attack the mathematical algorithm because it's often very difficult to do that. So these attacks will exploit various physical measurements of the device when it runs a cryptographic algorithm. You can, for instance, measure the power consumption, electromagnetic emissions, or timing, or any kind of physical phenomena that you can use to infer information about the cryptographic operation that is being performed. So let me try to give a small example. So for instance, if you are able to measure the power consumption of a chip when it runs cryptographic operation, you might be able to analyze the fluctuation in this power consumption and being able to deduce information about the data being processed inside the hardware. And if its data is related to the secret, to keys, then you will be able to recover, to retrieve the secret. I think the first version of side channel attack was in 1998, or maybe a little bit before. And the first channel was time. So the idea is to simply measure the time required to execute a specific cryptographic operation. And if the timing necessary to execute the operation depends on the key, then simply by measuring the time, you will be able to guess information about the secret. There is another high-level analogy that is quite good. Imagine you are trying to break a physical safe. So I'm opening the safe, and you are listening just the clicking sound that the lock makes when I'm turning the dial. So each time I turn the dial to a different number in the combination, the lock will make a slightly different sound. And if you are able to carefully listen the sounds, you might be able to simply figure out what was the correct combination. This is a very simple side channel attack, and the physical measurement is sound, is noise. The cryptographic algorithm is the safe. The general principle is this one.
I would like to come back to the specifics of how it works. I love the Ars Technical article. I actually like that we're referring to an Ars Technica article here because it actually has quite a bit of specifics on exactly how the attack works, and it tells the group of researchers who figured this out. I mean, it tells a story of the way that security works, right? The game of cat and mouse that is security works. So I think it's really worth reading it and doing your own research on that attack. Just so people have a sense of kind of the order of magnitude of this. I mean, one thing I find interesting is that it is Apple. It is the M1 chip, and because I've found the M1 chip personally to be pretty amazing in terms of what Apple has accomplished. My understanding is that Apple started working on that chip way back in 2007. So, these type of projects are very long lead for a company like Apple. So if I understand correctly, they started this project in 2007 and, the chip was finally released circa 2021, if I recall correctly. I'm going from memory, but I think this is at least like the order of magnitude of time that it takes to embark on something like this. And, Apple has a long history of using other people's chips before. The original Apple machines were built on the Motorola 6800-3040, if I recall correctly. Same as the Next, by the way, and then they moved to an IBM RISC model. Once upon a time, that was also a pretty big deal when they moved. Very performant, and so Apple has always. I mean, it's true that Apple has always been this company that has won because of a great operating system and a really great user experience. And personally, I find it inspiring that Apple has managed to keep up on the chip making. On the hardware side, they've done incredible work as well. So I was really surprised to learn that it has this kind of vulnerability, but this kind of thing is normal, particularly when you're trying to build a chip to do so many things. I have one dumb question for you that I should know the answer to and don't. The M1 chip is certainly in my laptop. Is it also in my phone? Is this the same line of chips?
Yeah, if you have a last generation laptop from Apple, it uses M1 chips. Yes.
And my phone as well?
And phone as well, yes. And this was a pretty bold move to decide to create a new chip from scratch. As you said, it takes a very long time. It's resource consuming. It's not only a chip; it's also a new instruction set, because before they were using x86 as other computer, and now they are using ARM. So that means that all the program running on your desktop and laptop must be compiled to this new instruction set. So that was really a bold move. I think it was a good idea, because desk chips are very efficient in terms of power; like, they don't consume so much power. And they are quite performant, and this is really what you need when you have a smartphone and when you have a laptop. You need something that is really powerful, that has a lot of memory, that is fast, and does not consume too much energy.
Yeah, so I think it's worth saying that, like, this is a chip that is like kind of an amazing technical feat, one of the most impressive technical feats of recent years in terms of chip building. So how surprised were you that this vulnerability was found? Is this you know, normal, no surprise for you, Charles, or were you surprised that this is there? Particularly, I guess the reason I ask is, you know, your first comment was, "Oh, this is exactly the kind of attack that, you know, I've known about for 20 plus years, and I've, you know, seen friends work closely on for 20 years." So, are you surprised that this, you know, this chip of Apple's is vulnerable to this?
No, I'm absolutely not surprised, because again, this type of chip has been designed for performance and not for security. And if you want to, like, having performance and security at the same time is not something really possible. You have to choose between the two. And when they designed their chip, they didn't design it for security purpose. They have designed it for performance and power consumption. This was really the two main dimension they needed to optimize. And when it comes to security, having a dedicated chip is, from my standpoint, is really the only way, because you are isolating the computation into an enclave, and implementing such side-channel attack is far, far more difficult, because you don't have other program running at the same time on the same chip. And this removes a very large number of attacks and threat vectors. So I was not surprised, and this kind of attack is not new. As I mentioned, when I read the paper this morning, I was like, oh, this is a very slight variation of what a friend of mine was doing in 2007. I discussed with him this morning, and he told me I feel old. But yeah, this was the same attack, and the history will repeat again and again. If you implement cryptography on general purpose MCU, CPU, there is no way to make it secure at the end. This is really what I think.
Huh. So, I mean, okay, so this is let's take the opportunity then and explain to people. I think from a practical perspective, I want to make sure we touch on a couple things. You know, how might this affect just, you know, your average user?
So, if this attack is exploited on the field in the wild, I don't think it's the case yet. We'll see. The problem is, you can go on a website, and this website can run some software, obviously, and this website can implement the attack and simply retrieve the keys that are used during the cryptographic implementation. So
like what kind of an application might someone, you know, have their keys stolen in?
So as soon as you are doing authentication, so you are connecting to your bank, then there is an OpenSSL implementation that allows you to authenticate to your bank. And on the other way, you are typing www.coinbase.com in order to be sure that this is really coinbase.com that is served. You need to authenticate the page and create some secure channel and encrypt all the data. And with this attack, you can fake this part. You can pretend being Coinbase without being Coinbase, and everything is signed properly. And there is no way for you to see the difference, because the cryptographic is simply broken. So this is like the range of attack that is possible when you are able to extract the keys on the client side is very wide.
And what about a crypto wallet on your phone that claims it's using the secure enclave?
So first of all, the software wallet that runs on phone do not use any secure enclave. So this doesn't exist. And yes, this type of attack applies on the software wallet that would compute signature or address derivation on your phone. But the thing is, it's even more simple to break a software wallet. You simply have to have malware running on the phone, and then it will be able to extract the keys. With this type of attack, there was something different that you don't even have to have privilege escalation. So in a user land, you could be able to observe what's going on your wallet at the same time. So this is an additional class of attack that is opened by this attack. Yes.
Okay. So what happens now? I mean, this is, you know, if I understand, like an unfixable vulnerability or any fix would be a serious degradation in performance. So do you think we'll see attacks on this? It will start to see attacks that leverage this on our M1 computers. Does Apple have a way of, I mean, it says unpatchable in the article. Like what's the practical implication here?
It's unpatchable because it's on the hardware itself. The hardware itself doesn't embed any security countermeasure that would allow to prevent this type of attack. Nonetheless, there are possible mitigation, and this will be the exact same thing that we saw for Meltdown and Spectre. There were two class of attacks that we saw 4 to 5 years ago that are in the same class of attacks. And the only type of countermeasure you can implement is to change a little bit the way the software is implemented and remove every single performance optimization. So at the end, the performance of the cryptographic implementation will be really, really, really slower, and it will mitigate a little bit the attack, and then we will enter into a cat and mouse game. This is exactly what we saw with Spectre and Meltdown. So Spectre and Meltdown broke x86 chips with the same type of attack, and what happened is they created different variation of the cryptographic implementation in order to mitigate the attack, and then some new variation of Meltdown have been found, so that they needed to update the code differently again and again and again. I think it's during those 5 years there has been probably 9 to 10 different variation of Meltdown and Spectre that broke the last patch that was mitigating the previous attack, and so on and so on. This is a cat and mouse game that will start from now, but there is no real way to have strong security guarantees in this setup.
Okay, so as you said, I mean, and this is something that we talk about at Ledger a lot, that I think people have, they either just don't worry about it, or they don't believe us until they need to believe us. But effectively, you know, what the analogy that I've heard Pascal use many times, and I've used since, is that, you know, what we ask our phones to do is sort of like if I asked you to protect $1 billion worth of gold bars in a building where I was also going to build a shopping mall and a kindergarten and a nightclub, right? We want our phones to do everything that they do, and you know, we want to use X and Candy Crush and mail and, you know, every app on the planet, but we also want it to be secure. And those two things, as you're saying, are just very hard to come by, because you want a chip that has a ton of memory, is highly performant. You know, if I understand correctly, the way this hack works is it actually uses some of the predictive capabilities of the chip that make it more performant, and they monitor those predictive capabilities and use that to steal the secrets effectively. It's in the Ars Technica article if people want to look more into it. And as you said a moment ago, Charles, you're much more a fan of the notion of using a specialized chip, which is exactly what we do with Ledger. And as you and I have talked about on podcasts before, you need really three things to be secure. One is for your private keys to be in a secure chip. Two, that they stay there when the operations are done. And three, you as the user need to approve any transactions or anything that's of value on a secure screen. So in a lot of ways, what your Ledger does, so if I look at a Ledger Stacks, which I have here in my hand, it has a secure chip. It also has a secure path to the secure touchscreen. So you have a secure touchscreen that, you know, right now I have my secure touchscreen sitting next to my insecure touchscreen. And that's, you know, precisely, you know, how how a ledger works. So, you know, in other words, you know, that is the preferred architecture in your professional view.
Yeah, totally. Like if you try to implement a software wallet like completely in software, you have none of those properties. First of all, your keys are on your computer or on your phone, exactly at the same place that where are the other applications that can share memories, that can share hard drives, that can share everything. So it's very difficult to have guarantees because you will have your keys in this building, as you say, with plenty of other applications at the same place that can access the same physical resources, the same CPU, the same memory, and all of this. So this is very difficult to have guarantees. The same applies when the cryptographic implementation is executed. At the same time, you have other operations that can monitor what's going on in the memory, what's going on in the predictive branch. This is what we are referring in the article. In order to have a better performance, CPU are doing predictive speculation in order to be faster when they execute. And as a third-party application, you can monitor those predictive branch in order to understand what's going on the other process that deals with secret. So in this case, there is nothing you can do. The problem is that you are sharing the same building with the secret, and the cryptographic operation happens exactly at the same time and at the same space as other application. So this is really the issue. And the last thing, as you mentioned, is as a user, when you are interacting with blockchain, when you are sending signing transactions, sending Bitcoin, or interacting with Ethereum blockchain, you need to understand what you are doing. So you need a dedicated screen where you can understand what's going on. Because if you don't have that, so maybe you are consenting for, signing a Bitcoin transaction of 0.1 Bitcoin to this specific address. This is what you see on the screen. But if this is compromised, maybe you are simply signing away your wallet, your entire wallet. And in order to have this kind of guarantees, having a dedicated device with a dedicated enclave with the secret inside and a dedicated screen that explain you what you are about to consent. For me, this is the only way to have guarantees. If you are trying to do this in software, maybe you will be able to find a countermeasure to mitigate this type of attack But at the end, there is another attack that you didn't predict, that you didn't think of, and then this is how attackers will drain your wallet.
I would first of all like to thank Apple for giving us this opportunity to talk about this topic. I think for me, this has been, you know, look, I met Pascal back in 2015, and I had just actually come from working at Apple, and Pascal told me that, you know, he had just invested in a small company in Paris that was working on a wallet for Bitcoin. And my question was, wait, why do I need a separate device to do this? You know, why isn't it, you know, I said, okay, I understand. Maybe my phone's not good at it today, but isn't it going to be good at it soon? Right. I was just, you know, I know how technology evolves, and I know that the phone that's in my pocket today is not the phone that's going to be in my pocket in 5 years. And so that's what I've found so interesting, you know, knowing Pascal, you know, for almost 9 years now, and knowing a lot more at the Ledger team for, you know, certainly, you know, more than five years, and working at Ledger now for more than 3 years, is constantly appreciating this. And that's why I sort of facetiously say thank you to Apple, because it's another opportunity to appreciate this. And that's why I approached the topic from this way, because I think the M1 chip is incredible. I was completely blown away by the M1 chip, by the performance of it, by the audacity of Apple to compete with the likes of, you know, of Intel and ARM, you know, and whomever, right? And I don't know, I've just been working my way through that book, Chip War. And, you know, what an incredible story. And then, you know, you and your expertise, Charles, I respect, you know, as much as anyone on this topic. And like I say, for you, it's it's sort of physics. Like, you can't secure a chip that's this performant, or you can, but it's going to be easier to poke holes in it because you're asking it to do so much. Whereas if you have a dedicated chip, so is that how phones eventually become secure? They have, you know, dedicated security chips and dedicated operating systems for these sort of things?
It's a very good question, because when you see the UX of a smartphone, you would like to have the same level of security of Ledger and the same type of UX that you have on the phone. We all understand this, and I don't disagree with that, not at all. The thing is, if today you want to implement the Ledger standard in a phone, there are a few missing pieces and at the hardware level. So first of all, there on some recent phones, you have integrated secure elements. So this is a dedicated piece of hardware where you have like strong security guarantees. The problem is that as of today, DES Enclave do not allow third-party developers to run code inside it. So if you want to build a wallet using this, unfortunately, it's not possible because of the restrictions that are given by the hardware vendor, the SoC vendor, SOC vendor, but also by the operating system. Like, the operating system doesn't allow you to load your code and to implement a wallet inside this enclave. So this is the first restriction we have. And the second one is the trusted display. Even if you have in the future, let's say we are able to load our own operating system in this secure enclave, then you will be able to ensure that your secret do not leave this enclave and that the cryptography is implemented inside this enclave. The problem is, as a user, how do you know when you are signing a transaction, what kind of transaction it is? Again, I want to send 0.1 Bitcoin to your address. What is written on the display can't really be trusted, because you can have a concurrent application that simply change what is written on the display, or ask the secure element to sign another transaction. And for you, you have no guarantees on this. So there's two things that are really important: having a trusted display and having a secure enclave. You can't have one without the other. Otherwise, you're just signing blank check. You just consent for something, but you have no idea what will be signed at the end. So this is really something that is important. And today, with the hardware that exists in the market on SOC-based devices like a phone and laptop and desktop, it's even worse. You have no way to implement a real trusted UI. You have no way to have guarantee that the fact that what is written on your screen can be trusted. It's simply not possible at the hardware level.
This is not just a crypto issue, right? I mean, this affects, you know, any application. I mean, does it affect my logins, like my ability, you know, as you were saying, logging into a bank account, et cetera? What, you know, give a recap for anybody who joined late.
Yeah, the overall idea is, like, when you use your M1 chip, when you use your phone, there are some application that run on one side and other application that run on the other side, and the software is supposed to provide you isolation so that the application B can't know anything about the application A. And the problem is, because they are running on the same hardware, it's possible for the application B to spy what's going on the application A. That would be the very high level way to explain this. And the way to In practice, it uses side channel attacks, and the idea is to have information on what's going on the application A by different ways, and one of these is the time. How long does it take to the application A to do this and that, and this thing you can monitor it from the application B. And application B can be anything, including like you are visiting a website and the website is simply spying your application A. And there is no way for you to see it and to understand it.
The question I have for you is, if I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh shit, I've got, you know, an M1 in my hand and an M1 chip on my desk, what do I do? Like, practically speaking, is there something a user should do?
the first thing you should do is to stay up to date. Implement the security patches because they will, or maybe they had already implemented some mitigation. Again, there are mitigation against this type of attack, and then attackers will find variation of this attack and so on. But if you are up to date, you have less chances to be exploited using this this vector. So that would be the first advice. And the second one is, if you have a valuable on your smartphone or your computer, such as private keys that secure your wallet, maybe it's a good time to consider putting them on a specific device that is specialized for security, naming a hardware wallet, and Ledger devices are the best for this.
You know, and again, like I say, when I talk about it, it sounds like marketing. When you talk about it, it sounds like physics. Why do you believe that Ledger is the best solution on the market for that?
First of all, having dedicated devices is far better than using a software wallet. So having a hardware wallet is better than a software one. So this is the first thing. And the second reason, if you compare hardware wallet between each other, Ledger devices are using secure element, smart card technologies. And this technology is specifically designed for security. This is the same type of circuit that you find in your passport or in your banking card. The big difference is in your passport or in your banking cards, the secrets that are inside are the bank's secret or the state's secret. In Ledger devices, you are your own bank. You are self-sovereign. The secrets that are inside are your secret. So this is a difference. But this is the same technology. This is quite fun to see that blockchain give back the power to the user, and Ledger use the same technology as banks and states to give back the power to the user.
I love that. I mean, it's to be honest, it's the reason that I'm here. You know, again, you know, and that was actually the thing that I did understand first about Ledger is you're taking that technology that is usually used to protect the secrets of the government or the secrets of a bank, and instead you're protecting my secrets, right? And I believe that as we move forward into the future, we're going to have more and more digital ownership. And, you know, not everything needs to be decentralized. You know, my gym card does not need to be decentralized. My passport is issued by a central authority who can revoke it. But things like property rights and speech, well, those should not be able to be revoked by a centralized authority. And, you know, that's exactly the power that blockchains and Ledger put into the hands of consumers. So thank you, Charles, for explaining it to us. And, you know, we'll see y'all again next time.
Yeah, thank you. And stay safe.